We've had an awful lot of complaints from a variety of people who say they don't know what we're here for, they don't know what Israel means, they don't know the title of the organization or what it's supposed to effect. So we're going to talk about that. And relative to it, there was a short time ago, I understand, a phone call wanting to know what is the relation between the phonetics eight and hate, spelled E-I-G-H-T and H-A-T-E. Now it happens that both of them are connected mysteriously with the subject matter we're going to talk about. Does anybody know the title of this organization without being prompted by anybody else? Did someone say hierarchical values? I thought I heard the word hierarchical. Did I? I'm sure I did. Hierarchical. Well, the word in the dictionary would be defined, hierology, as pertaining to knowledge of a race or a people, and particularly their sacred or secret knowledges of how they constituted themselves as a nation or people. If we're going to take it a bit deeper than that, where the base HR means itself a ladder of differentiation. H was an original drawing of a ladder, and the R is a vibratory letter, as you know, when you try to pronounce it scotwise, and signifies to differentiate or discriminate. So we're going to use H and R to explain the studies that we undertake. H is originally a drawing of a ladder with eight rungs. And the eight rungs you can spell R-U-N-G-S or W-R-O-N-G-S. The eighth one is reserved for the origin of all things, which is fundamental, infinite, sentient power. The other seven, you all know, under the symbology of the seven planets of the ancients, which we will discuss, and which Donald's paper on Burma has something to do with. The eighth letter of the alphabet is H, not only in English but also in Hebrew, and it was made the eighth letter deliberately. Now the way we do a figure of eight like this is a glyph which signifies two worlds, a world there and a world there. And if you do a figure of S going down and a figure of S going up, it will give you the glyph for the descent and ascent of consciousness itself. That is to say, sentient power initiates a movement which is essentially undulatory, it's a waveform, like a sine wave, and it comes down to the bottom, and then it goes up to the top. So the figure of eight actually is a drawing of a double process. Now we live in two worlds, a world inside the skin and a world outside the skin. These two worlds are only two worlds by the way we look at them. Let's consider very carefully. You can do this with your own body. Most of you have integuments or skins, more or less unbroken, whereby you can retain inside you your blood, nervous impulses and so on, and confine them within your organism. And you can say, I close my eyes and I think of myself, I can ignore the external world. Now, inner means higher and outer means lower. in this symbology. So when we do the figure of eight, or two circles touching each other at the middle, the top circle is to be thought of as internal. Would you like a drawing of that?
Yeah.
Would you prefer a drawing?
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a pen that works, which will depend upon my friend here pulling the top off for me. Can you make them up?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, pulling out, I'll put this on the side like this. A circle, a circle. But really, there are not two circles. There is one force moving down, round, and reflecting back on itself. That is the origin of our reflection. Now, how do we come to say that the upper one represents inwardness and the lower one outwardness? Well, we redraw the diagram. There is an original central being, and that being rotates on itself, and then it goes out from itself and turns around like that, and it goes around itself again, and it turns out like that, and it goes around again, and it turns out like this, and it goes around again, and it turns out like this. And there are four zones, so important in Bible symbology, corresponding with the four beasts of the apocalypse. And by going round in this way and turning all the time like this, we can fill in the whole area. You can go like this, and you can see that by turning in this manner, we will gradually make an outer world. Now this periphery is the periphery of our interest. Must be the heat. Is that any better?
Yeah,
just a bit better. Try. Drying up. That's too pale. Is that one dry? No. Try again. I like this part. That one new. Can you see the red? Is it? Blue? Red? Now the wobble on that, like this, is caused by a fundamental property of sentient power. Sentient power likes to manifest, but it hates being bound up in its own manifestation. So all such motions are vibratory like this. You can't make your mind up without your mind unmaking itself up in the act of making it up, because when you make it up, you define and tighten the power which constitutes your being. And when you unmake it up, there's nothing there for you to see. Now remember, it is all power, and we started with this inner circle here, and then by extending the inner circle like this, we made an outer circle. But we don't want to spend all our time drawing a big drawing if we can represent the same idea with a small drawing. It's more economic. My favorite subject is economics. So we just go like this. And that's very quick. And you now know that this one belongs here, and this one belongs there. We've now explained why the ancients always said the higher is the inner and the lower is the outer. It is far more convenient on a flat surface to do a drawing than it would be to model a sphere within a sphere, because it would be very difficult for you to get inside the sphere to model the contents of it once you've made the first sphere. Now the Chinese, with their ivory carvings, did this very laboriously by getting a bowl of ivory equals one dead elephant and carving a shape with symbols on the outer part, and then cut into a certain depth and then cut round inside until they released a ball of ivory inside the first one. And the first one was carved with a lattice of symbolic figures, but you could cut through the lattice the next ball. I don't know whether you've seen these things, they're fairly rare these days, but they do exist in museums here and there. A ball of ivory that has been carved in this very subtle way into seven spheres, one inside the other. If you have any spare time in your holidays, try it. Not with dead elephant teeth, but with a ball of plaster. It works just as well. I've tried it, and it's very, very long-winded work. But it can be done. Now, it's much simpler to draw a figure of eight, providing we remember that higher is inner and lower is outer. Now,
I'm in trouble again.
I'm trying to keep secrets, and somebody's trying to expose them. Now, this part here, the whole of this band here, is called the exoteric band of action. And the one on the inside is called esoteric. Some say esoteric, but I don't mind. I'll put the S in there, and I'll put EX in there. The whole of this band is exoteric, or external, and the innermost center is esoteric, meaning essence. Those who want to say esoteric, when they come to see the word essence, let them say essence. I don't mind, and we'll see why in a moment. The eighth letter was originally a drawing. I'll do more or less. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. An eight-rung ladder like that. But the top rung there belongs to eternity, infinity, and is hidden in the hole in the center, like in a black hole. Now the other seven, if you want to work them out, you start by marking them with Saturn on the bottom rung, and then you write all the other days of the week backwards up. Can you tell me what it is before Saturn's day?
Venus.
It's Venus's day, and what's before that?
Jupiter.
And before that is Jupiter's day, and before that? Mercury's day, and before that, Mars day, and before that, Moon day, and before that, Sun day. We've written the names of the week backwards. There was a marvelous, insane poet called Christopher Smart, and he once complained very bitterly that we'd got all the days in the wrong order. And he was having a little joke. He was really a very intelligent man that for a quiet life went into a mental hospital where he thought that the staff were saner than the people outside. Now, you see, the involutionary process up this ladder, if a person starts on the bottom of the ladder with Saturn, that means possessiveness, grab. All the things to do with finite processes are on the bottom. And when you do that, the next thing you have, which generated it on the inward movement, is the Venus day, love, If you didn't love, you wouldn't grab, would you? Would you? Nobody's telling me. Do I have to work it out for myself in hot weather like this? All right. Now, you love a thing only if it allows you to expand. That's Jupiter expansion. But if it expands, it develops centrifugal force and tends to throw itself out, and that's Mercury, and you get very clever there, seeking your expansion. And the faster it runs, the hotter it gets, so you go into Mars. And at a certain critical point, that Mars will defeat itself, and you will turn into a dead body by the heat generated, because the expansion generated by the heat will suddenly seize up and produce a moon. Now, further contraction of the moon will result in a sudden blaze of light from the compression, and that is the sun. We know that our own moon in the sky is apparently dead, but we also know that at some time in the future, through its internal contractions, it will set on fire and become a minor sun. Now remember, the top rung, the eighth one, represents the absolute, and the rest are the seven planets in reverse order, beginning with Saturn's day. Now, hierarchy has to do entirely with this ladder of power. We'll now relate this to the two spellings, eight, that's E, life, individuated, compacted, hierologized, that is made into a ladder, crucified, is that right? Does that spell eight? Well, think about it in this way. The E represents, the Hebrew for it is hey, life itself. The I, in the Hebrew is a yod, a dot, the principle of individuation. The G is a gimel, which is a camel, or self-compacted being. The H is a ladder, and we'll just do that for the ladder. And the T simply is a cross, which in the Hebrew is a towel like that. Now, the word eight tells you the whole problem of the universe. There is life, a field of sentient power. It is infinitely extended. There is nowhere where it is not. We are all centers precipitated by life, and we are represented by a dot or mark of individuality insofar as we exist distinguishably from each other. Now the hard G, which in English has softened itself somewhat and nearly disappeared, because in English, if we were to write that phonetic word, we would write in international phonetic A-I-T. And that's how you spell eight in international phonetic. The G-H here in the middle, an aspirated G, is really a very, very harsh, rough sound. I don't wish to offend your ears with it, so I will not make it as rough as I could. A gentle approach is the Scottish loch. The och in loch. And a slightly harder one would be oh, oh. Now, if every time you had to utter the word eight, when you came to the GH, you pronounce it like this, it would not be economic, apart from the stains on the necktie of your opponent. As a matter of fact, that's why I didn't put a tie on tonight. Not, as you would have thought, because of the weather. Now, the one thing that human beings hate in all this universe is hierarchy. A real differentiation of powers in which human beings are not the absolute authority. They are not the original power which retains eternally the whip which can drive all creatures, of which we are some, whether they like it or not, as Islam is fond of saying, Allah, whether you like it or not, is the boss, he's the top. He is an original power, and we can't overthrow him. So in principle, we hate the eight. We hate hierarchy. What it means, because of the law of the inequality of finites, every individual human being in the world differs from another, differs in power, and the power expresses itself physically, so all the people in this room have not got the same muscle development, the same karate breaking power. They have not got the same emotional power, real power. They haven't got the same temporal information, the knowledge of time matters. They haven't got the same governing concepts, the numeral forms of Plato. And they haven't got the same capacity for initiative will. And they haven't got available the same amount of consciousness. So we could say, from first principle, of all of us in this room, some of us are cleverer than others in some way. My right hand is cleverer than my left, physically. So there's a hierarchical difference. If I were to bang my right knuckles on my left knuckles will bruise before the right ones. I've tried it, and I can assure you that it really is so. And you can do the same, find a tender spot on your body which normally you don't expose to thumpings, and then make a good fist and thump it and see if the fist doesn't mind, but the recipient cells, not used to being thumped, do mind. Now can you see that because of the fact, not the fancy, not the theory, the fact of the differentiation of powers, the universe is a hierarchy. The universe is power levels. The universe is intelligence levels. The universe is sentiency levels, differences of feeling sensitivity. The universe that we know and live in has six levels at which no two of us are identical in capacity. Now tell me truthfully, do you like the idea that you are not the top power in the universe? Do you like it? Honestly. Do you like to think that some super being long, long ago precipitated a world and in turn to it precipitated us without asking our permission first? And I have to pray God the greatest sin about this, that the original creator that we call God made the world without consulting us first, and then precipitated us through a series of gradations of power downwards until here we are, sitting in bodies, some of them not very good, some not very well, some quite strong, some cleverer than others, and so on. In no way are any two of us exactly equal, either in body power, emotional power, temporal knowledge, conceptual wisdom, volitional power, or consciousness itself. We haven't got it. Now, do we like it? No? I can see one or two heads saying no. Well, those will be the truthful heads. There might be some that are going like this quietly. Not wanting to let the cat out of the bag. But certainly, all creatures who are not absolute in their power and intelligence and sensitivity tend, not necessarily, but tend to resent their inferior position. So there is a natural hatred of hierarchy in all beings that have been created, and especially in human beings. Now, I'm going to draw the figure of eight. Remember, the top circle represents the innermost essence. So I'm going to go like this. I'm going to write ES for essence. And that tells you that life is triple. It is not accidental that the letter E has three lines on it. And that's triple life: thought, feeling, and will. And the S represents sentience, whereby thought, feeling, and will have remarkable powers of adaptability, adjustment. Through our serpentine sensuality, we can adjust to the threefold information that we have. And the lower one here is X. Life triple again, and the X is a form of cross, called the Andrew Cross, which means battle. Life is a battle in the lower region. I'm going to shade the lower one a bit like this to remind you that in the external world the light is relatively dark. If you do a little experiment, like press on your eyeball gently with your eye closed, after a few seconds you'll start seeing lights. Have you done that before? If you close your eye and then do it, you can get lights. And as your pressure increases, but don't burst the eyeball, just do it enough, you will find that the light in your eye is brighter than a light outside. In fact, it can become astonishingly bright, right looking at the sun. Actually, the light in the eye derives from the sun. And in a very powerful, imaginative, internal play, the light in the mind, in that essential thing, is so bright that the brightness of it actually obscures form. Now commit that to memory. The light of the absolute is so bright that if it's looked at directly, you can't see anything. All the forms are outshone. You know perfectly well, if you get a very, very intense spotlight and put it on a paper that's got a drawing on it, it is very difficult to see the drawing because of the intense light reflected from the paper. Remember that essential light in the Tibetan Book of the Dead is called equable light. Equable does not mean half a light, mediocre light. It means a light so intense that it's entirely balanced, and it obscures its total formal content by excess of light. Consequently, if things are to be known in their separativity, formally and accurately, then this light has to be diminished. There is a little word in Christian theology, kenosis. I'll write that for you. Kenosis means emptying. Now it is said very clearly in the best theological works that God has to go through this process in order to empty himself of his own superlative brilliance, which is so great that nothing can be seen in it. We are blinded by the excess of light. So the Creator, in order to make manifest the content of essence in himself, has to make a point. And he comes down, and the point he makes is on the intersection there. And that point there is this letter. That's the letter Yod. That letter Yod, although it means a point, we can spell it with three letters. We write the three letters down. Y-O-D. And the Y, yeah. as in Yisrael, is the same word in the word yes, and it means affirmation. The O in it is correspondent with the Hebrew samach, and means the seed or potentiality, and the D means a door. So if I wanted to draw that yod in a naturalistic way, I would draw a picture of a seed, and I'd make the seed dark like that, and I'd let the force that's been trapped in the seed by the original creative act, which, remember, is an act of precipitation into finity by the infinite, and there bursts out of this seed a plant, and if we're lucky, a blossom. Now, when we see that word yod like that, which is the tenth letter, tenere to hold, holds the seeds of all possibility in the primordial point, which is precipitated by the infinite, essential, triple, sentient power. All that essential power is precipitated into a primordial point, and that point is our individuality. When we say I, and we're not thinking about our external self-image that we want to impose on other people or even to dupe ourselves with, we're talking about pure sentient power internal to our being, and that is us. It is our self. We do not have a soul, we are a soul. The soul is the eternal precipitate of eternal sentient power. The eternal sentient power prior to creation is called the Godhead. As creator, it is called God. As individual awareness in the human being, it is called soul. The soul is the means whereby we maintain our solo nature relative to each other. Now, when that point is precipitated, the glaring light is subdued, we have a little dark point, and then all the essential light, the truth, the beauty of eternity, has to be squeezed through that point, and it goes into the lower region and is darkened by being squeezed through it. In Goethe's theory of colour, you have the opposite of the Newtonian theory of colour, where colour is represented as the suffering of pure light encountering impedances. When you get a prism and shine white light through it, you see that the prism splits the light into the colours of the rainbow. Now, in Newton's theory, it is said that the colours of the rainbow added up make white light. In the Goethe theory, it says no. White light, when it encounters impedances, is split into the colours of the rainbow. They're very similar, and we can see a point of view that will satisfy both of them and make them very convenient to understand. From one point of view, we can get white light and shine it through a prism and show a rainbow on the wall. From the other point of view, we can condense the colours of the rainbow to a point of white light. Both are true. There's a very good rule to commit to memory. If there are a pair of opposites, then assert or deny both simultaneously. Now, in this world below, which is the outer world, there is darkness. Now, that darkness is called nescience, not knowingness, and when deliberate, ignorance. Ignoring is willful disregard of known facts. Ignorance is willed, but it is possible to not know without willing to not know, and that's called nescience. Not science, not knowing. When we come down at conception point, we come down into a little body, which is already matter, and which darkens the essential blazing light of eternity and reduces it to the level of an individual being, an ignorant dark being. It will ignore the pains that it doesn't want, and it will actually fall under the dominion of its own world ignorance and then become nescient in many areas. The axe means conflict, two swords or staves crossed. In the realm of ignorance, in the realm of darkness, there are perpetual quarrels. So the dark world below, which is outermost, is the world of fightings. We talk a lot about failure of communication, causing a lot of troubles in individuals, where the parts of the individual's mind, feelings and will do not fit. We talk about the same thing in family quarrels and in group quarrels and international quarrels, failures of communication. Now, if we don't communicate truthfully to each other, then any adjustment we make will be false and deficient. And when we see that magical figure of eight, we can see we have a memory inside us. We should really change the N's in memory to H's. Can you say heritage? Well, it's a good word, and it means what memory means, but not materialized. In the world of essence, there is no M. In the world of matter, there is an M down here. So instead of saying memory, we're going to have, you like that? Now that's the word memory with H's instead of M's. But the H's, you know, the H is an aspirate letter and means spirit, aspiring. It's going upwards towards essentially free self-determination. When it comes down into a body, it is darkened by passing through the point of individuation. Now, the more you think you're an individual, the darker you are. Kierkegaard said, "Think of me as that individual." But he said it. And so the little boys in the streets threw stones at him because their parents didn't like him being an individual. Now, being an individual is a dialectical thing. If you are an individual, it is because the essential power, the God, has precipitated a form of reference deliberately to obscure you so you don't blind everybody with your brilliance, with your wit, with demonstrations of power, with miracles. All those funny pseudo-yoga systems that promise for $4,000 the ability to levitate and glide over the heads of motorists on the M1 are leg pullers. Anybody who could float wouldn't in public. There's always somebody ready with a pea shooter waiting for a levitator. So the essential thing about, and by essential I mean up here, the essential thing about all true power is that true power does not exhibit itself in public. Why? Because everybody naturally hates the eight. Everybody hates hierarchy. They hate superiority in other beings. They hate pseudo superiority, but they also hate real superiority, which is a product of grace. Grace being this, that essence passes through certain individuals and enlightens them a little more than others. You can't have hierarchy without a difference of power. Without a difference of power, everything is equal. If everything is equal, there is no universe. Let's be very clear about that. If everything for absolutely equal, that's Mahapralaya, everything would vanish. If all the forces were in perfect balance, they could not express, they would disappear. There would be no universe. So in order for there to be a universe, there must be differentiation of power. And we have to accept it whether we like it or not. Now we can accept it gracefully and be glad of it, or we can accept it disgracefully. That means lacking freedom, and stupidly fight against the essential differences of power that exist in the universe. Many politicians fall down through not accepting the power differences between left, center, and right. If those power differences are intelligently accepted in the universe, in the world, on earth, in the nations, in the tribes, in the families, in the single individual, then that individual has no problem. Total acceptance of power differences of people, physically, emotionally, mentationally, conceptually, volitionally, and in pure hexonic consciousness. To accept them is to be able to work with them. Not to accept them is not to be able to work with them and to be steamrolled by them. Because the thing about power is this: if we accept it, we can take action not to be crushed. If we don't accept it, we will be crushed by the law of hierarchy. Now the X down here means life, triple life, thought, feeling, will, fighting itself because of the ignorance of the lower half of this figure eight. Now whenever we identify ourselves as a finite organism, we are necessarily contradicting our own innermost essence. The essence there is not limited in the way this empirical egotism is limited. So when we come down in the dark and we believe that our individuality is separate, and we were right for the individuality, J-I-V-A, now that's a word that means the individual affirmed for developmental activity. It's an individual assuming that he has work to do to develop himself. We'll put that on this point here, but we'll have another word for the essential here. Hidden in the light is the self-Atman. Now that Atman is also the word self, but it does not mean empirical egotism trying to develop itself. It means the hidden essential difference in the Godhead, in that splendid light. A difference that is eternal, but is not egotistic. It becomes egotistic only by identification with the hard G in the ego. When we condense that point and make it the point of reference down here, in the realm of ignorance and shadow, we think. Now thinking is thinging. A thing is an external, gross compaction of power that looks self-existent, like this pen looks self-existent. Now we know that it isn't, because it was manufactured, and somebody made the felt, and somebody made the plastic container, and somebody made the ink, and so on. And it was compounded by the world intention of many beings. But it looks self-existent. In the same way, the empirical ego, this jiva here, looks self-dependent, looks self-existent, but it is not. It is a compound, and it is compounded of an infinity, literally an infinity, of forces which have been condensed in the universe in a certain pattern unique to every individual. Now when you examine your individuality with the idea that you are finite and separate from other beings, your position is the most erroneous one that is possible to imagine. It is a belief in fundamental atomism. Now, if we go back to a very important religion, the religion of Zarathustra in ancient Persia, the Greek form is Zoroaster. Zarathustra taught about an idea of good and evil forces, and it was totally misrepresented by certain religious bodies as a dualism. Now, it is not a dualism at all. There is an absolute in it, and the name of the absolute is Akarana. That means not created. And it means zealous activity, differentiating and vanishing. Now, the A there, the letter A, is privative. Karana means created. Akarana means not created. Now, this is the name of the absolute as a non-created, zealously activating, differentiating, vanishing being. It is foolishly translated endless time in European works. It isn't time, it's eternity. But time is a function within it. Now that split itself and had two sons. And one son was called Ahura. Ahura. Is that like Ahura? I'll spell it that way. Ahura, and the name of an electric lamp, Mazda. And that's his firstborn son. And remember, when we do the number six, we come from infinity and we wind round like that, and as it closes on itself there, that circle is an enclosed light, and it is the sun of the infinite light before it. The absolutely dazzling light there has made itself a ball of light, which is called its sun. Now that one can then wind inwards to itself and tighten itself up and tighten and then make a dark one like that. That's like the eyeball of the iris with the pupil in it. Now after that first light, the first circle precipitated had been made, that was called the first sun, Ahura Mazda, sometimes written Ormuz. And by further condensation, it put the light out in the center and made that yod point, that point of individuation at the gross material level. Now, we said before, the inner is the higher, and the lower of the two is the outer. Now, in this drawing, we have to redo it for you, go round, and we go in, and remember, we pack very tightly. But in fact, we can never go to dead center, because it is actually a motion of sentient power. So what it does, it gets so tight there, trying to get to the center, there's a little light in the middle, and then it flashes out like that. That flash out, if we were to draw it all the way around like this, would be our flashing sun, the material body of the sun in the sky, flashing out like that. But the light in the center is still the innermost. Now the light in the center is our Atman, and the light that is in the dark part is the Jiva, trying to find out how it was precipitated in this manner. Now, you can see that by compaction we made the center of that spot very, very markedly individual. So we want a principle emerging, emanating from the Ahura Mazda, and his name is the HR of the month. And this one is the devil. This is the dark one who has been precipitated, and his name means atomism. I'll write atomism there for you in case I forget. The point of individuation is a point of precipitation of your physical material body. It's a thing that you can touch and verify like this, and when you're in trouble you tend to contract yourself onto your physical center like a tortoise, reducing its vulnerability. Now Ahriman, the principle of atomism or granularity, very much the delight of physical scientists, is the devil, because devil means division. Devil means the being that worships analysis and wants to split reality into little bits in order to control it. So we have here a light, Ahura Mazda, precipitating into the world progressively and involving light until at a certain critical point it goes dark. And that's the point Ahriman. The absolute has now established a hierarchy, HR, of individual man evaluations. The individual now thinks his opinion is as good as anyone else's, including God's. Very interesting that we can actually know that we did not do a PhD or an MA or something in any given university subject, and yet we can somehow believe that we know more about it than the fellow who has. And funnily enough, we can be right. We never know whether the professor is as dim as we are or not. So that actually, once the light is put out, we have no way in our identification with our individuality, we have no way of determining the truth or untruth of anything absolutely. We brought ourselves down into the world of relative evaluations with nothing but a finite ego structure to use as our standard of reference. So the standard becomes I myself. In my finitude, I'm qualified to evaluate the whole universe. You know there's that tendency, don't you? You do know that you tend to think your opinion is as good as anyone else's, at least, and in many things better. But you also know that in that Ahrimanic, that atomistic part of your consciousness, you do not believe that that supreme light, the Ahura Mazda's father, that uncreated generator of all things, does not exist. You don't believe it. With your empirical egotistic atomistic mind, you cannot believe it. As long as you are identified with your finitude, you cannot have faith in an invisible, intelligent power that has your welfare at heart. How could you logically, if you're identified with your gross finitude and all your information has come through your five sense organs and you have no other information? Now the five sense organs are specially made darkeners of the light. William Blake says closed by our senses five, not opened, closed. The eye is sensitive to only a very limited gamut of colors. The ear is sensitive only to a few octaves. A dog can hear above our hearing level with a certain whistle. We can't hear it, and we can't hear very much below the lowest notes on a piano. Our sense of smell and taste and touch, they're all deficient. They are not clevernesses that we have gained. There are limitations imposed on us so that we are not blinded by infinite light. That's an inversion of what we normally tend to believe. Now you can see that if we identify with this HRI, this hierarchical, discriminating, egoic individuality, tied down to its five senses, it cannot believe that there is a transcendent intelligent power. It has no ground to believe it, no evidence to believe it, no reason to believe it. So it cannot come by the Ahrimanic, egotistic, atomistic, lower mind thinking, does God exist or not? The great angelic doctor Thomas Aquinas tried to produce five proofs of the existence of God. That was a sort of error, because if there is a proof, we don't need five of them. One will do. And if you can't prove that one, you can't prove the other four. Now the only way of proving, and the word prove means probe, whether or not there is a God, is to become internalized and go inside and find that little spot of light right in the middle, deeper than the egoic, atomistic, Ahrimanic, and discover that that light is the Ahura Mazda. We have that light right in the middle there, Ahura Mazda. And this darkness is this edge here, limiting. Can you see that it's not possible to believe in God as an intelligent, sentient, infinite power with our welfare at heart? If we use our five sense organs for gathering the evidence, we have none. We have a possibility by deep internalization, an intense contemplation of our own innermostness to discover that light, but not otherwise. Now, is it a comfortable feeling to say this? The whole of the evidences, the five sense organs and the external world, can only lead us of themselves into trouble. They can't lead to enlightenment. They're the opposite. They are Ahrimanic. What they are doing is bent on creating nuclear wars, polluting the world and destroying it. Because of the very nature of the organism identified with individuated atomism, egotism. Now everybody today, because of the fear of that possible nuclear war, very, very nervous, and they're looking for alternatives to that war. But they're not clear enough about it. And this world, the dark world that we're in, the lower one of the eight, this external world is said to be in the grip of the devil. The whole world of matter is in the grip of the devil. So all the beings that live inside this dark realm are egotistically pursuing their own purposes, and they are prepared, if need be, to blow the world and everybody else up. And they are designing space platforms for themselves and igloos on the moon, and all kinds of lovely things to make themselves safe while they blow everything up. But the others, which are not so deeply, grossly identified, and they number increasingly more and more as the fear of annihilation increases, those are aware of another possibility: intelligent, relational, volitional intent. It's a possibility. But it requires that we face the battle in which, in the realm of the darkness, we have to bring, and this is by contemplation of inwardness, we have to bring the essential being down and take it down to our own individuality there. I've left a little white dot in the middle there. And say, in the middle of that fallen world here, in the center of that fallen individual, there is nevertheless enlightenment, which is essential, on which it reverberates with, resonates with the essential sentient power of macrocosmos. This is our problem. Now, how do we manage to remember, to retain, even a little mnemonic like worship is continual remembrance. But how do we remember to remember? Well, we said, hey, Hori, into the memory. We remember that only, and under no other condition, only if we remember that the universe is already eternally hierarchical, can we do it. If we remember that if we don't acquire this hierarchical knowledge, this hierology, this logos of hieros, only if we remember that can we do it. Here is a nice word. That means sacred, holy, pertaining to the priest. That means love. And this means the hierarchy in the individual. You accept your own individuality. You accept the individuality in every other being. You make no attempt to change another being's innermost nature. And you love that being. That means to say, triply, think, feel, will, you differentiate the potential spirit of that being. And you tolerate absolutely the other person's peculiar behaviors because they come from inside. Now, if you think that anyone, whatever, can change another being's inside by external application of force, physical, emotional, mental, then you are in error. There is no way whatever that the essential center of another being can in any way be changed from outside. So all we can do is accept the fact, and in accepting it, love the fact, because the differentials in other beings are the means whereby our own differences are affirmed. Can we see that our uniqueness, the thing we prize, the thing we're most proud of in ourselves, the thing we know to be most valuable, is our fundamental difference? And if that we most value, then, as Kierkegaard would say, what we affirm for myself, I must affirm for everyone. If there is this inner uniqueness in me, I have to know from that fact that there is an inner uniqueness in everyone else. And if I wish my innermost uniqueness to be respected, I must respect that in other people. Now, the moment I'm prepared to accept whatever comes out of another person, whether so-called good, bad, or indifferent, when I can accept it fully, the total situation changes. Why? Because that absolute power is suddenly aware of what we are doing internally. We are here for our education. And that absolute power knows what we need. And as long as we insist on doing the thing individually, egotistically, we will be allowed to bang ourselves against brick walls and hurt ourselves. But when we understand the necessity for total respect for the innermost individuality of every other being, and we do this cheerfully and freely, the world changes. The world is changed for us by that mystical power, that Allah, that Akarana Dharan. That power changes everything within it. The moment somebody realizes the essential inefficiency of total acceptance of the uniqueness of every other being, how do we feel about it? Comfortable? Well, there's an enemy. The enemy is our old friend. Ignorance, darkness, incapacity in the egotistical structure to believe what we're talking about. Can you feel yourself believing 100% in what we're talking about? Can you actually feel in yourself that you believe that the infinite power which precipitated the stars, the galaxy, the solar system, the sun, the moon, the planets, the earth, can you believe that that great power is concerned with the beating of the wing of a gnat? Can you believe it? Now, if you can believe that, the next step, can you believe it's a human being? Can you believe it in such a way that whatever anybody else does or buzzes at you, you can accept it freely, in a relaxed, happy way, as his or her way of buzzing?
No, that's the
worst. That's the
worst.
Why?
That's the
worst. That's the worst. You mean that's the worst, isn't it? That you have to work. Because we are conceived in the dark world. Now, why was that done? Why was the dark world precipitated by an act of kenosis of the Absolute? Very simple. I will now draw for you, without using my pen, that space. I drew it by winding my sleeve out. I drew it across there, and that's white. If we made it terribly intense, it would blind us. I want you to imagine that is an infinite light, equable, and so intense that you cannot see the hidden form in it. Now, how can it manifest its content to itself if it keeps its light at the same intensity? Can it show its content? If all the light throughout it is brilliantly outshining itself, is equable and intense, can it show its marvellousnesses? Can it show the colours of the rainbow without a prism to break it up? No. Therefore, it, the Absolute, willed that it had two suns. Ahura Mazda, the light, the son of the Absolute Light, and Ahriman, his brother, to present him with opposition. Now, without resistance, we cannot know anything. We cannot know how clever we are unless we argue with a dimmer-witted person than we think we are ourselves. We need the resistances. The Absolute created the resistances in order to manifest the hidden wonders of its own being hidden in the light. And it could do that in only one way: empty the light, get rid of the absoluteness of the light, and have relative lights, degrees of light to dark. But that degrees is hierarchy. The study of that is hierarchy. We need, for our education, resistances. We provide each other with them. Now, if we don't accept the type of resistance we get from the other persons we meet, joyfully, gladly, especially when they contradict your favourite idea, if we don't accept them joyfully, we're missing the whole point of the exercise. If we do accept it, we become what the sages would call transparent. We let them through, and in the act of going through, we see the light. If instead of defending ourselves against an emotional attack or a verbal attack of another being, we open ourselves and consider it and identify and feel what it's like to get so mad at somebody, but don't get mad at it, just feel the rage, the indignity, the envy, the spite, but do not condemn them. Just observe, Santo's got his rag out at the moment. But don't get mad at him. Say, how very interesting. What a marvelous demonstration of rag outness. And when we can do this with everything and everybody in every situation, we are called divinized. We have attained the same transparency of the infinite light. Can you see there's no other way to get it? Not by contradicting each other, but by saying, explain more to me. Give me more details. Now, unless the other person is omniscient, they're going to break down at some point in their explanation. So all you need to do is encourage them to come out. Tell me more of your beautiful theory. I'm all ears, all eyes. What happens if instead of opposing somebody, you deliberately encourage them to come out? And you don't get mad at them. And if they get mad at you for not getting mad at them, you don't get mad at that. You encourage them to come out. Let them explain themselves. The energy that they pour out becomes yours. Now that is a law of hierarchy. I'm now going to say, to make a world, we must put down a primordial point. I will put that primordial point there. And I'll wind it to the middle, where I put it in the first place, before I put it up there to make a diagram. I put it up there to give me space here, but I could put it anywhere, including down there. Then I draw my diagram backwards. And I'm going to put it there. And I'm going to call that part special name. I'm going to call it KTR. You can pronounce that Kether if you like. The phonetics are KTR. And it means locked, crucified, vibrating point. And that point is Kether, is power, sentient power, locked in the form of an initiative idea. Now I want to do the rest of the drawing, but I want you to imagine that I'm not going to do it inside that dot where it really is, but I'm going to do it outside to make it clearer. And I want you to imagine that what I'm about to draw now is, in fact, inside that KTR dot. That's my primary point of precipitation. And when I go inside it, I penetrate from the periphery to the center, and to symbolize penetration, I'm going to draw a straight line like that. That simply means a radius moving in. I want you to imagine that is inside this little dot. And then I want you to have another symbol. I'm going to say the symbol here really is like this. It's a cup to receive this force. And I'm going to call this one with a funny kind of guttural H there, and a K and an M and a hey, which I write like that. Chokmah. Chokmah means a driving force precipitated by that primordial point, driving into itself, and the point is receiving it, and the point in receiving it is called BN. I'll put an E there. That's the recipient. This one is male, that one is female. But don't confuse yourself with chauvinism of any kind. Male doesn't mean clever, it means pushing. Female doesn't mean passive dim, it means recipient. Without the recipient intent on this side, the driving intent of this side would vanish into infinity. So we then have a triangle, which I'll represent like that. And say that triangle, a primordial point, viewed internally to itself as self-precipitated and therefore self-penetrating and self-receptive. That's called the supernal triad. Now everything else I draw after that must be viewed again inside this triangle, which is inside that triangle. But that triangle, locked in the Kether there, is eternally there, co-present with itself in all its properties and attributes forever, infinitely. So I want now to represent the same thing, but viewed as coming outwards into manifestation. So I invert the triad like that. Now the hidden Kether point there, has now come down here. I'll put the glyph of the sun that doth in a circle there, and put that one on your solar plexus. And then we have that the male principle of push has become, and here I will put Jupiter, the first three-dimensional being. He's called the first concrete god. And when that sets itself up, immediately there is a fight. As soon as there is a god, there is a devil. As soon as that force, which is the product of the female and male powers that were hidden in the primordial point, as soon as that force declares itself, I am a three-dimensional god, immediately there will be opposition. Prove it. I will throw everything I've got at you, and you must prove it. And if you win, there will be a sun. That's the Messiah point. There will be a sun. That sun is the product of a fight between the visible god and the antagonistic forces that must be hurled at that god to test whether it truly is a god. So when I've done this triangle, which is the first one inverted, because now we're in the realm of manifestation, I have to move the whole triangle down again. Do many of you know the Sri Yantra of Hindu thought? These triangles are there represented one on top of the other, and it's very confusing. Here, Kabbalistically, we separate them out. This one now moves, and the concrete three-dimensional god becomes love in the world, and the fighting power becomes commerce in the world, and the sun power becomes in the world moon power. The steady light of the sun, as it descends lower, becomes phasic. Your intelligence wobbles. Sometimes you're clever, sometimes not so clever. Sometimes you're strong, sometimes you're weak. Sometimes you've eaten, sometimes not. Sometimes slept, sometimes not. So that the sun now represents itself in the moon. Now, remember, this triangle is inside that one, and that one is inside that, and that one is inside that primordial dot, and that dot is inside the absolute as a precipitate of it. Now, all of those 9 points there represented are included in another one at the bottom. That is the sign of the earth, of incarnation. And we now count them. We have the earth as container in those three triangles. And now the primordial Kether point appears on the earth as concrete, manifest, incarnate intelligence of the absolute. And that means that every individual human being is actually all of those 10 simultaneously swimming in the infinite ocean of absolute sentient power. How do you feel if you accept that you're actually divine beings with these 10 functions hidden inside you? Now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Where's the 7th planet? It is here, Saturn. Saturn, the receptive. Sat means being, and the urn means a container. Saturn, the container of being. So we've now got the 7 planets, all of them inside the earth, and the earth is itself the incarnation of the original point. Now we have those all inside us, every one of us, all the time, both in life and death, so-called. A birth in this world is a death in eternity. And the death in this world is a re-entrance into eternity. Nothing lost. How do we feel when we see that simple point?
Eugene, what do you use the glyph of the
when the Jupiter becomes concreted, three-dimensional, it sets up an object for worship in the world. Now we started off as everybody hates hierarchy. So if anybody appears on earth and says, I am the eternal God, here, visible, then everybody who is not feeling like accepting that wish to kill him. Not only a Jewish teacher, Jesus, was killed, Zarathustra was killed, Buddha, hosts of martyrs were killed for the same reason. They became visible and said, we are better than you. The whole of the problem for the Jews is this. They just publicize our God is better than your God. And the rest of the world hated it. So they attacked them. Can you see that, Roy? It is entirely a matter of this. If you become visible, you're an object that can be targeted against, and the energy that comes against you is symbolized by Mars, which means rage. It is the Ram, R-A-M, of the Ramayana. It is primordial, furious energy that says, how dare you manifest as a here, present being, when you know perfectly well that in the center of my being, I also am such a being as you, and you're trying to steal a march on me and stop me being that absolute power which you manifest. Therefore, you must be killed. It is fitting that one should die for the people. That's impossible to avoid. As soon as you get clever in any way whatever, you're in for trouble. There's a joke about the fool in the Tower of that. He is the magician, the first Tower of Card, disguised like the Scarlet Pimpernel, is the local idiot. The more you can disclaim what you know, or joke about it, or make it superficial, or of no account, the safer you are. But if ever anybody really believes that you're as tough as you really are, they must have a go at you. Now, if you know that, you can say, I think I'll try my muscles out. I'll be clever, open it, and see who hits me. And if so, how hard. And perhaps, like Gandhi, arrange my own assassination. I don't want to die in geriatrics, incontinent, wearing pads. Yeah? So when I get near to that, I'll start being awkward. How near do you think I am yet? When the bomb is thrown, I will know. And until that time, every one of us has this dialectical problem. We'd all like to be what we are, fundamentally spiritual powers of creativity. That is what we are, essentially, in our innermost. We would like to show it outside, but the wise, absolute divinity has put the light out for us. Because you know what happens if we all shine simultaneously? We blast each other out of visibility. Shall we think about that now for a minute?